Hello, everyone, and welcome to minute 36 of season 5 of Movie Rob Minute, the daily podcast where we yippee-ki-yay our way through the 1990 Bruce Willis action film Die Hard 2, Die Harder, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again this season is the still podcasting lapsed Jess Rogers. So welcome back to the show, Jess. You still don't have your own podcast again, but that's fine. I'm glad you're still on mine.
Thank you. It's nice to be here.
Yeah, I'm glad you're able to come back and talk with me, even though you haven't started your own yet. But, you know, the whole idea is to reignite that fire in you that you're going to want to do your own. But until then, you're more than welcome to keep coming back.
Thanks.
So, no problem. Well, at this point, we'll see what happens after this
week. We'll see what happens.
I'll give you this week, and we'll see what happens after that. How's that? So episode 36 begins with the bat phone continuing to ring and ends with Stuart continuing with his demands. So basically we left things on Friday with everyone in the tower realizing that they've lost all control over everything. You know, the lights went off on the runway, and then they started hearing a phone ring, and they said, oh, that's the FAA hotline. And then we got stopped. So today we're picking up from there. And, you know, the first shot that we see, I just love. We see this little box on top of a phone that has three switches on it, a red light, a place to turn a key. And there's like the, what were they called? You know, the things that you can make labels, the label makers.
Mm-hmm.
Which they have here, that, you know, that they made labels that one says monitor and one says speaker. Do you remember what I'm talking about? Those label makers that they used to have?
I don't know, they had a different name other than label maker, right?
Yeah, exactly. I wonder if people still use them. I didn't even think about that. You know, is a label maker still something, or do people just do it on the computer and therefore, you know, they don't really need to? But I remember having those. Remember you had to turn the dial on the top to the letter you wanted, and you needed to press it, and you know, and that's really how this looks. You know,
it's absolutely the old fashioned label makers with the red tape, and you could get black tape and then the white letters punch out in them. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. And again, the fun thing is that basically, you know, it does not look very professional. So
no.
You'd think that in the airport, in Dulles Airport, in the air control tower, they would have something a little bit more sophisticated, but they don't. And then at the bottom, you have the little seal that says, Federal Aviation Administration. So,
right.
You know, it's really funny. And it reminded me of the, you know, like the whole idea of a red phone, you know, even though it's not a phone here, you know, but so you have the hotline between Moscow and Washington. You know, which we always imagined was a red phone like you have in Batman, you know, which is like a red phone, you know, which, you know, is under a cake holder or something like that, you know, that you know, that when the president needs to call the Kremlin, you know, he has to take off the cake holder, the cake plate
just
holder.
Just in case he doesn't use it for any other reason. Yeah, you got to make sure it's safe and clean.
That's right. So I actually looked that up a little bit, like what this whole hotline is. Do you know when they started the hotline between Moscow and Washington?
I want to say it was after the Bay of Pigs, so in the 60s probably.
That's right. It was 1963. So it was, yes, not long after Bay of Pigs, where they did that. You'd think that they would have maybe done it a little closer to, you know, the whole Cuban Missile Crisis, but maybe they want to spread it out a little bit before they did it. And basically, you know, it's known as the red telephone. But the thing is, it was never really a telephone line, and they never use a red phone. You know, that's just what they use in movies and stuff like that. That's what they call it. Exactly. They at the beginning used the teletype equipment. And then in 1986, they started using fax machines and they used fax machines till 2008. And since 2008, they have a hotline that has a secure computer link where messages are exchanged via a secure form of email.
Right.
Which obviously makes sense. You know.
Can't hack in.
Yeah. But again, it still bothers me that it's not a red phone. You know, I was thinking, you know, because it brought me back to the whole idea of the bat phone. You know, I'm assuming you remember the Batman shows of of the 60s, you know, where that's where you have it.
Yeah.
You know, it was a private phone that really was a phone that only had high priority calls between, you know, Commissioner Gordon and Batman when he needed to call him.
Right. Yeah,
and, you know, from they even had one that they installed in the Batmobile at some point, you know, which theoretically was one of the very first types of cell phones, I guess you can say. It wasn't real, but, you know, the idea of having a, you know, an emergency phone in a car is just great. You know, so I just love that other idea, you know, and, you know, I looked it up and there's a whole bunch of different types of uses of red phones ever since then. You know, like,
I guess it's I always thought the red phone was because Russia was considered the Red Army and all that, yeah. Like their symbol is red, but you're right. Looking at this, red buzzer, it's more of a importance value than yes. It is really a communist value.
Correct. Right. I mean, the biggest in 2007, Michael Bloomberg, the mayor of New York,
sure.
said that he only receives phones on a secure bat phone installed in his kitchen.
Nice.
So yeah, you know, it's just it's fun to look at this idea and see, you know, how they do these things and stuff like that. You know, even in do you ever watch the TV show Entourage?
I never did. No, I didn't have HBO at the time.
Right. So Jeremy Piven's character, he's a talent mm-hmm. agent, and he always called his cell phone a bat phone, you know, which he's obligated to answer if it rings three times.
Gotcha.
You know, so it makes sense that they would do something like that. So yeah, they have this blinking light on a little box, which mm-hmm. to me it still doesn't make sense. Also, what the idea of monitor is? Does that mean they have like video conferencing? That's a possibility.
I don't think so at this point, right? They're still rocking faxes and pagers.
Exactly, but that's my point. It's like it's very strange that it says on their monitor, you know, and then speaker. So you know, you'd think that it would have, you know, either speaker or you pick up the phone, you know, something like that. But here it's not. It's like, okay, you got a speaker.
Yeah.
And then we get the first line of the minute where we get John saying, maybe it's the boys who pulled the plug.
I love that he pulled all your plugs.
That's what he said.
Yeah. And now he's got a coffee cup in his hand, too. And
yes.
It's like, I noticed that sort of had come out of what felt like nowhere.
Yeah.
Did he find it?
That's right. No, I actually didn't even notice it. I wasn't even paying attention and didn't see that somehow someone gave John a cup of coffee.
Yeah.
That's right. Hey, pretty good. And then Trudeau says, put it on the speaker. You know, right. I don't know who he's saying that to or whatever, but, you know, that's what he needs to do.
he's not used to telling specific instructions. He just barks them and someone does them.
Yeah, pretty much. And I mean, once again, and we're going to see this quite often throughout this whole minute, you know, we see that John is pretty much the smartest person in the room. You know, he's the only one who's able to figure out that it's probably the bad guys that are calling on this phone right now.
Right.
You know, everyone else thinks it's the FAA, you know.
And it's got to be the biggest, like he's the big picture thinker. He's suspicious. No one, you'd think, and part of watching this, it was very much remembering it being in a very pre-9/11 world. And they weren't spending all this time assuming anything was a terrorist.
No, of course not.
It was, that just wasn't how it worked. They were just assuming it was a punk. I love that.
Yeah.
Punks and gangs who hang out at the airport.
Right. Well, I mean, we mentioned this, that in the script, it mentions the fact that it's happened before, that they had punks come in and, you know, cause problems.
Right.
So, you know, they sort of left that out in the final cut. But, you know, that is their biggest problem. They're not dealing with terrorists. They don't really care.
No.
You know, as far as they're concerned, what we're dealing with here is, you know, some punks trying to steal luggage, which I don't know what they're trying to steal. You know, I don't know why they're trying to steal luggage or anything like that.
Yeah.
And then we get to hear on the speaker. Now, for me, what's really strange, I'll say he puts it on the speaker, but therefore everybody in the entire control tower can now hear.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you'd think that, all right, I'm curious to know what's happening here. So if that's the case, I don't need everyone, all 30 or 50 or wherever many people there are in this in this place to actually hear what's going on. Maybe it
Right,
is the FAA.
presumably.
Maybe it's the FAA
Yeah.
calling. So like, why does the FAA need to hear about this?
And the one of the things that comes up sort of anytime they're in the tower for the whole movie is, aren't there people doing like legitimate jobs, or ultimately when they cut them all off, doing nothing? Why are they all involved in this? Why is there nothing kind of secret going on, I guess?
Right.
I agree.
Okay. Well, I did look back at Friday's minute, and John is holding the cup of coffee.
Oh, is he? Okay, so
Yeah.
maybe he had it right before then too.
So yeah,
I
I
feel like we
didn't.
never saw how he got it.
No, we never see it. I'm looking back now to Thursday minute to see if I can see him holding a cup there either. But no, he's not holding a cup in Thursday's minute.
Okay,
But
so he just
there
hears it
is a
before.
point where the they show us something going on in the church, so maybe during those like
Yeah.
20 seconds, John was able to sit and make a cup of coffee,
Right.
and I mean it's a pretty small cup of coffee, so I don't think he really
Yeah.
needed to make a cup of coffee. I think all he needed to do was just pour it for himself.
Right.
I mean yeah, he's I see him standing there next to the coffee maker, and nope, he does not have he nope. We never see John make the cup of coffee.
Just holding
That
it.
is such a great catch. I didn't even think of it. Thank you very much for pointing that out. You see, we missed it last week also.
It's just such a funny little blue cup. It's, like you said, it's really small, and it
Maybe it's
kind of
like a
glows in the
cappuccino.
dark. Yeah, maybe. Although this is the 90s, I don't know if cappuccinos have really caught on yet.
It's John. John, he does
True.
he doesn't catch on to technology, but maybe cappuccinos,
Maybe
he really does
cappuccino.
like. It's cappuccinos with Twinkies. He and Al always are going out in the town having cappuccinos and Twinkies.
Nice.
It's possible. I don't know. I mean, I don't drink cappuccinos, so I don't even know. That might have actually even be too big of a cup for a cappuccino.
No, that'd be espresso. Those are the itty bitty ones.
Oh, okay.
Cappuccinos are a regular cup.
Oh, so then okay, so maybe this is an espresso. Excuse me. See, I don't drink coffee, so I don't know about these things. Never got into this stuff. So. And then we
Better for
I have other vices, so
it.
I get my caffeine and I'm addicted to movies. I don't know which is worse.
Ah.
It's a problem. I mean, I don't think it's worse, but then again, anyone who's addicted to something does not think that it's a bad thing.
That those are the bad
So
things, true.
that's true. Yeah, I don't think that movie watching will be the death of me one day. How's that? It'll be
Either.
something else. But I don't think it'll be movie watching, and unless someone gets really upset at me. But I don't see that happening either. So then we hear the voice of Colonel Stewart, where he says, "Attention, Dulles Tower, attention. They say that blind men become very attentive by the way of compensation. Now that you're both blind and deaf, I think I've got your attention. I'm aware your recorders are active, so I'll be quick. You can play me back later to your heart's content." So some of the things he says here are pretty strange. First of all,
Yeah.
first of all, he says that they're blind. How are they blind? They can see everything that's going on. They just don't have lights on the runway. That doesn't mean they're
Right.
blind. They're
Right.
they can see on their equipment everything.
And they haven't lost sound yet, so they don't know
That's right.
anything.
And they're not deaf because they don't. That's
Right.
right. They can still hear. And
Yeah.
from what we know, they're still able to communicate. So they're
Right.
able. They haven't lost any of their senses. Nothing.
Yeah.
It's a great line. I love it.
It just doesn't make sense
It just
in
doesn't make sense when you
context.
think about it
Right.
within the context. It might have worked maybe later in the week when he actually cuts them off
Yeah.
for next week, but until then, but again, it's great dialogue. There's no question about that.
Yeah.
As he's talking, we do get shots of some of his men in the
Right.
church, right? We see Miller and Garber doing like tech stuff. They look very busy
Yeah,
with
like
what they're doing.
passing this book back and forth. That was just such an odd direction
Yes.
choice. Like all the main action is way in the back of the shot, and in the front we're gonna have these two guys just doing mundane things. Like,
Yes.
yeah, I don't know, it felt very strange.
Well, no, busy work. You need to make these guys all seem
Yeah.
as if they're really busy. You know, he like moves back on his Miller moves back on his chair, and then he reaches back and Garber gives him the, gives him the book. And then he slowly goes back. He's very interested in what's going on in the book. Now, if you notice in the foreground, you can actually see the red tape on a machine gun. So I like that little touch that, it's there from beforehand. We don't have to, it's not something that's just going to pop up later in the movie. It's there. So,
It's something
that's
we're supposed
great.
to keep seeing.
Right.
I
Now,
don't know if you wonder about it, though. That's the thing.
yeah, that's true. I mean, when I first saw the movie later on, when they actually switch it, I actually figured it out because I'd seen another movie where they did that. And then I was like, wait a second, this is very strange. Did you ever hear of the movie The Park Is Mine or the book The Park Is Mine? It's
No, I haven't.
with Tommy Lee Jones. It's about a
Oh, wow.
it was an HBO movie in like 86, I think it came out. And it was about a Vietnam vet that wanted to try and he was supposed to get something and didn't get it, for being a vet or whatever it is. So he decides to take over Central Park.
Okay. Nope.
So in that movie, part of the or in the book, it part of the idea is that he uses blanks. So he has, blue cartridges and red cartridges and stuff like that. So
Gotcha. I
when
wonder
I
if they
saw this, I
still
was like, whoa, that's really cool. I figured it out. I didn't figure out everything, but to me,
are.
it just hit me at the time when I saw it for that type of thing. Now, my biggest question is, okay, Stewart and all his men are special forces. Where do they get the training to, deal with aircraft, with planes? Like these guys had to, they all had a crash course, no pun intended, in learning how to deal with all this stuff. But something is a little off here.
And the ability to hack in this way, like this is super early hacking, being able to really control the tower. I mean, even from the beginning, this would have pre-9/11, this still would have been very protected stuff. Like, see them digging in the behind the church to get in, and I don't know, maybe they oversimplified some of the
No, well,
things.
obviously, they didn't
Well,
expect someone, 33 years later to be, going through this movie minute by minute and try to figure it out.
fair.
I mean, this is out of love for the movie, that we're picking it apart, but,
Oh,
it
absolutely.
just doesn't make any sense. I mean, it's the whole idea also. I mean, we talked about this a little bit last week. Where did they get this equipment? Did they buy it off the black market? Did they steal it from some, some airport that nobody was using? I don't know. I mean, it's, and how much does it cost to, I mean,
And
obviously
they say,
I couldn't look up how much it cost in 1990, to steal this or, to buy this stuff or even rent it. Yeah, I want to rent, I'm looking to rent, control tower equipment. Do you have a
the
good deal for
ability to
me?
practice. And where do you get it? And they say 2 months planning at some point. And it's like, they did all this in 2 months planning? That's
That's right.
impressive
It's very
without
impressive.
any
Well, they
knowledge.
are special forces, so
I guess that's it. Yeah, you tell them what needs to be
right.
done.
No, but on the other hand, maybe part of their training is the idea that they're able to, I don't know, do a coup in some sort of Central American country, and therefore they do need this information. That could possibly be, that they train them. Okay, what you're going to do is you're going to help take over this country, and you're going to be in control of the airport. So therefore, we're training you to do all this stuff. It could be.
Yeah, maybe it could happen. I
I
like
mean,
that. That's very
I
plausible.
mean, when we looked at Cochrane's dossier 2 weeks ago, it didn't mention anything about that. But anything's possible. It could be that
True.
during his training at Fort Bragg, he learned how to, land a plane. I don't know.
True.
Or crash a plane or whatever it is that they need to do. Who knows? And then, in order for Trudeau to actually respond to him, we hear him flip a switch. Okay. But again, we saw the box. Where is he flipping a switch? What is he? What is he doing in order to be able to speak? I don't know.
Maybe that's what monitor means, is the listening to it. No, but that's what the speaker would be, right?
Yeah, I
don't know.
Right. I mean, they do have computers there, so monitors make sense.
Right. No, that would make sense. Yeah. Absolutely. But
I mean, it makes sense from a logical perspective. It doesn't make sense that they're using that, you know.
No.
We're going to do teleconferencing. Oh, okay. Yeah, maybe Skype.
Yeah.
You know, Zoom.
Maybe.
The very early incarnations of these things, you know.
Yeah.
And 1990 was even before most people had home computers.
Oh, yeah, definitely didn't.
I think I got my first home computer in maybe 94. And that was also very early. I remember I had Windows 3.1. You know, it wasn't able to do anything that they're able to do here, you know.
No.
I mean, as a kid, I had a computer, Commodore 64. But, you know, nowadays you can buy a discount key that holds a lot more than that, you know, and does a lot more. But, yeah. And then the shot goes back to the church, and we see Stuart again. And I love the fade that they do here, because they show, first of all, the map. And the map is in focus and Stuart is not. And then they switch it.
Right.
And then we see Stuart in focus and the map is no longer in focus. So they do that really, really well.
Mm-hmm.
Continue speaking. You know, I mean, Trudeau first said, "How did you get on this line? Who is this?" Like, he's going to answer. Come on.
Right.
You know, it sounds like, you know, going back to the Batman relationship earlier in this episode. Okay, you know, if it would have been Batman and say, "Who is this?" You'd say, "Oh, this is the Riddler." You know, they'd automatically say right away who they are and what they're doing. But in this case, nah, that's not going to happen.
No, they've already set it up so that they know who they're going to figure out who this is on their own, right? It makes them look smarter. They figure it out.
Yeah, well, they don't figure it out. That's the whole thing. It takes a long time for them to figure it out.
To figure out who Trudeau is?
No.
Or not Trudeau, I'm sorry.
To figure out who Stuart is.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's John who figures out first who Stuart is. You know,
right.
They don't know. You know, it'll come up in, I think, like another 15, 20 minutes or something like that, when the name will come up at some point. And no one seems fazed at that point, you know. But later this week, we'll find out when John finds out who it is, even though John bumped into him at the beginning. And so Stuart's response is, "Who I am isn't unimportant. What I want, well, if you don't want those planes to start splashing into the Potomac as they run out of fuel, what I want is very important. A plane will be landing at this airport in 58 minutes. It is FM-1, Foreign Military 1. Now, I'm sure you gentlemen are well aware of the unique nature of this flight." So before we continue with this, okay, so first of all, I want to point out the novel that this is based on is called 58 Minutes.
Oh, wow.
Okay, it was written by Walter Wager. I have not, it's something that's so difficult to find in print. I know one of my previous guests, Josh Horowitz, told me that he was able to get it out of the library. And I assume he's finished reading it by now. That I don't know. He told me he got it. He didn't tell me, you know, that he's read it or that he enjoyed it. I read the book when this movie came out. You know, I had gotten a copy of it. But, you know, 30, I have no idea where that book is. I probably resold it, you know, at a used bookstore at some point, and that would have been it. I remember the idea that it's this cop who's at the airport I think he's in JFK, and there's like a terrorist at the airport and his daughter's flight is supposed to come in or something like that. Again, I'd love to reread it one of these days if I ever figure out how to get a copy. I remember I looked online at some point to get one, and it was like, because it's so rare, it was really expensive. So it wasn't worth trying to get it at that point. I like the fact that they mentioned that, even though it's so inconsequential to us that there is 58 minutes till this plane is supposed to land.
Right.
You know, but I guess it makes sense.
That time out too.
Right. I mean, I guess the idea is that Stuart decided that he would wait until an hour beforehand to do all this stuff. You know,
right.
I don't know. It's not very well planning, because if he would have had any problems and something would have gone wrong, that wouldn't necessarily have worked so well, but you know, it did. So everything worked well for him. So, you know, he mentions the Potomac. All right. Last week, you know, Trudeau says that, you know, we don't want planes dropping on the White House lawn.
Right.
So, you know, we discussed a little bit about that. But, you know, the Potomac. So what do you know about the Potomac River?
I know it's pretty far from Dulles, but and it runs into the Chesapeake Bay, and other than that, not much.
Okay, you are definitely correct. It's very close to Reagan Airport, yep. which was known as National Airport at this time. I don't think it was Reagan. Mm. I don't think in 1990 it was Reagan yet.
No.
There's a movie about a plane disaster that happened there called Flight 90 Disaster on the Potomac, which I remember seeing when it was on TV in 84, I think it was. And I actually just rewatched it today, you know, because it inspired me to rewatch it. Yeah, I found it on YouTube. I mean, it's a great little movie, but you know, I really enjoyed what they did there. Unfortunately, I mean, it's a disaster, so it's not a happy story. But you know, that was around the time. You know, when you watch disaster movies, you're not looking for happy stuff, anyways. You know, so the Potomac is 405 miles long, and it, as you mentioned, it flows from the Potomac Highlands in West Virginia to the Chesapeake Bay in Maryland, the fourth largest river on the east coast of the U.S. and the 21st largest in the whole U.S. And there are about 5 million people that live within the area of the Potomac itself.
Okay. Wow, I would have assumed it was higher than that.
Yeah. Now, what I found really cool is that there are, like, you know, you can actually find dolphins in the Potomac.
You know, that makes sense.
That just was, like, really, really interesting for me to find that out. I'd never would have thought.
Because it'd be a pretty brackish river. Water, like it's an estuary where the ocean sort of meets the fresh water.
Right. Correct.
So they could go some distance in, but probably not very far.
You're the professor on that type of stuff. you probably know better than I do. But you know, I just thought it was very cool.
I can make it up a lot. That's true.
And there you go. You know, your PhD helps you make it seem as if it's more important. There you go.
Fair.
Right. So then John looks over at Trudeau and says, Esperanza. And, you know, and right before that, we get another shot of Miller, you know, doing busy work. You know,
right.
You know, because he's the traffic controller he's the pretend traffic controller.
Right.
You know, and once again, John catches on very quickly as to what's going on here. Trudeau just nods at him. That John must be right, you know, that it is Esperanza. And then Stewart continues talking and says, and the importance of its cargo. So I'll go back a little bit. It says, now I'm sure you gentlemen are well aware of the unique nature of this flight and the importance of its cargo. This plane will not be met by anyone. It will land on a runway of my designation where it will remain isolated and unapproached.
Nice.
You know, so, and that's pretty much how he ends the minute. I mean, it makes sense what he's saying there about what their, you know, their plan. I've been trying to figure out if this is a well thought out plan or not. I don't know.
I don't know either. It seems.
Sorry. It is well thought out. Whether it's a good plan or not, that I don't know. That's
right. Right. No, I understood what you meant.
You know.
And Trudeau has this look of resignation when McLean says Esperanza, and he's like, yep, that's gotta be what it is.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, we're screwed now.
Yeah.
And he's basically, you can kind of, I mean, Fred Thompson, for being a pretty awful senator, is a pretty not bad actor. And at least showing how, like, the weight of what he knew was coming, that should have been a fairly routine thing, has now been totally messed up.
Yeah.
Right. It should have been easy. It's just a foreign transport, dropping off a criminal, da da da. It's all done. But
correct.
Yeah. It's a good minute.
Yeah.
It's the start of the plan. It's lots of good exposition. Who knows
That's
what?
That's right. Now I just want to go back a little bit. So at second 52, when Stewart is talking, if you look behind him, there's this huge box. Okay, that has four red lights on it, and it has a countdown that is counting up. You know, you'd think that would be the countdown saying 58 minutes, But instead, it's currently showing us 44 minutes, 44 hours, 37 minutes, and 58 seconds, which I have no idea what that's apparently counting down towards. It just, or counting up.
Right. It is counting up towards something. Yeah. You'd think it'd be counting down.
Exactly. It's, again, it's, I think it's just there for the furniture to make
that's
it
so funny.
To make it seem as if something busy is going on. But, you know, most people wouldn't look to see. I've never noticed it before. You know, I've seen this movie dozens of times. I've never noticed it. It's,
no, I haven't either.
You know, and it's just hilarious that it's counting up.
Right.
You know, is, you know, and if it was like 44 minutes, it would make more sense. But 44 hours, like, what are they counting up towards? I don't know.
And because it's not like what their next plan is. Their next plan should take fewer than 2 hours.
That's right.
And then it's some number of hours to get to it. No, there's no logic that of anything we know that should get anywhere near there. No.
Nope. Absolutely no clue. Maybe it's like, you know, it's been 44 hours, 37 minutes and 58 seconds since the last work-related accident. I don't know. Yeah.
That would make sense.
That's where my thinking goes. I don't know.
Yeah.
That's as far as I got.
Yeah.
All right. So you have anything else you want to say about this movie before we get into the script?
No, I think that's good.
Okay. So the script has a few little minor discrepancies. But it has a little bit more stuff that Stuart says here. So first of all, instead of John saying, maybe it's the boys who pulled your plugs, John goes, maybe it's them. That's it. You know, a lot quicker.
Oh, right.
And then, you know, when Stuart starts talking, it says, I think by now I've got your attention. I know your recorders go 24 hours around the clock. So I'll be quick. You can play me back later all you want. And then Trudeau says, how did you get on this line? Who is this? You know, the same line he says in the movie.
Right.
And then Stuart says, who I am is unimportant. What I want? Well, if you don't want those planes overhead to start dropping like flies when they run out of fuel, what I want is very important. I like the Potomac aspect of it. It makes it a little more interesting. You know, makes it more relevant to the geographical area, I guess.
Yeah.
And then Stuart says, this plane is scheduled to be met by a contingent from the U.S. Justice Department, but now there will be a change of plans. This plane will not be met by anyone. It will land on a runway of my designation where it will not be molested. Okay. I like what they did in the movie better. I think that works a little bit better. It's
interesting.
It's a little too dry in you know, in the way that they show things here. So
right.
I don't know if that was something that William Sadler changed on his own, or, you know, during rehearsals they said, well, why don't we just, you know, make this a little quicker, make it sound let him speak with more grandeur. I don't know.
Right. I like isolated and unapproached instead of molested.
Yeah, it's true. It makes a lot more sense.
Yeah.
Great. Every Monday we have a segment called McLean Monday, where my guests will give their top five Bruce Willis performances. So Jess, what have you got for us? Start with your number five and work your way up.
Number five, and looking back at all of his movies, holy cow, does this man work?
Yes.
Or did, especially in all kinds of movies, like crazy.
Yeah.
And I remember watching him on Moonlighting, like doing reruns of Moonlighting. Mm-hmm. And then he sort of disappeared. And it's like, oh, yeah, he was just this TV actor who sort of did these things. And then Die Hard came out. But then people were like, well, what do they do with him? And I remember Look Who's Talking. And this is my number five, where he's the voice of the baby in utero and then ultimately the baby outside.
Mikey.
And he's just amazing. He's so good at that.
Yeah.
I loved it.
Yeah, he was hilarious in that role.
He's hilarious in Look Who's Talking. My number four is also a comedy, The Whole Nine Yards, with Matt, which was really a vehicle for Matthew Perry, but it's him trying to figure out how to be sort of on the other side of this whole thing.
Yeah.
Being a killer and then deciding he doesn't want to kill anymore. I thought it works. Number three is Armageddon. because he's so good in it, and the whole movie makes no sense and scientifically, but he's really good. He's gonna drill and he's gonna get home. Okay, sure. I love it. And then my fiance said that if the fifth element wasn't on my list, that we would have to call off the wedding. And so, of course, the fifth element is actually number two on my list. It's so good.
Wait a second. Is it on your list because of your fiance, or is it on your list because you wanted it to be on your list?
No, it was already on my list.
Oh, okay. All right, good.
I need to move it up on the list so that I would appease him. He reminded me of it. It was the first thing he said when I mentioned this list to him. The fifth element, I mean, is constantly good. Like, you get new things out of it almost every time you watch it. The music in it is amazing. The insanity of the whole storyline is just so good. He does a really good job having a strong relationship with female co-stars.
Yes.
Yes. I was just thinking, like, in The Whole Nine Yards, he and Amanda Peet really bounce off each other to the point where you actually believe their chemistry by the end. But it's not like a particular sexual chemistry. It's just they bounce off each other really well.
Yep.
And he does that really well in The Fifth Element, too. And then my number one, and it would have come up no matter what, and it's probably the movie of his I've seen the most number of times because I rented it from, you know, on a VHS tape. Oh my God, so many times in middle school and high school. It's a terrible movie. It frequently gets a worst of movie list on lots of things, and it's Hudson Hawk because I love it.
You're telling me that there's no Die Hard on this list?
No, there's no Die Hard on this list.
Wow.
I wanted to think outside it. I'm not going to lie and say Die Hard isn't one of his best movies ever, but my top five.
Okay. No, that's fair. You are allowed. I was just shocked. Yes, Hudson Hawk is a very fun but extremely crazy movie.
Extremely crazy. Yeah. It's so terrible, but it's got all these weirdo flashbacks and double crosses and crazy moments and, oh my God, insanity.
Yeah.
Andy McDowell's talking like a dolphin. It's just a stupid movie, but I love it. So.
Okay. All right. That is completely fair. All right, great. So, Jess, even though you are a lapsed podcaster, do you want to tell people how they can get in touch with you if they want to?
Sure. You can find me on Twitter. It's in_entertain because my previous blog was Insight into Entertainment, and I haven't changed it yet, but you will see my name as the correct Jess Rogers on there. And pretty much find me there.
All right, great. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Rob Minute. You can find me on Facebook, you can find me on Twitter, or you can find me on my website, movierobminute.com. Until tomorrow, yippee-ki-yay!
Yippee-ki-yay!
If you're fond of sand dunes and salty air, quaint little villages here and there,